Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's start with a jokey preview of what's coming up this episode. Joe Biden and civil rights leaders got together around the question, should the feds and local police departments put their heads together and create a robust crime reporting system so everyone knows exactly the stats on crime? And so Joe Biden and civil rights leaders looked at that question and they came back with an affirmative answer of, hell no, we shouldn't do that. The three Supreme Court justices appointed by Donald Trump all agree Donald Trump is an existential threat and he needs to be stopped. Hey ladies, I've got the flu and COVID. How sexy am I now? Well, enough of that. On with the rest of the show. Hurricane Otis flattened Acapulco. They were talking about it on the All In podcast. Acapulco is a city of 1 million people. It knocked down every single utility pole in the entire city. The eye of the hurricane went straight across the city. It came in at 1 a.m. It went from like a, I don't know what, a tropical storm, so not even a hurricane, to a Category 5 hurricane in 6 hours. The ocean temperatures off of Acapulco are 88 degrees Fahrenheit. That'd probably be like low 30s Celsius. And apparently all the computer models that predict what the hurricane are going to do, not a single one of them had any idea that it might turn into a Cat 5 hurricane. So, you know, Mexicans. But, you know, Acapulco, there's a lot of Americans going down there to visit. And so you're drinking tequila, you're drinking Coronas, you go to bed drunk. It's nothing in the weather report about a Category 5 hurricane. And you wake up at 1 a.m., Cat 5 is blowing in all your windows. How's your timeshare now? Here's a cute little story from Monica Guzman, who does a Braver Way podcast. She's a Seattle lefty who was brought to America from Mexico by her parents when she was a small child. And her parents voted for Trump twice. But she's talking about being a little kid in school when she didn't know English that good.
As for me, being in a whole new world made me more shy and more careful. After I heard the drive-through story, I remembered a moment from my first grade classroom in the small town of Dover, New Hampshire. I raised my hand. I remember my heart was pounding to ask my teacher for extra paper I needed for an assignment. She said it was in the drawer and pointed to the front of the room. But I didn't know what a drawer was yet. And I thought what she said kind of sounded like door. So I walked up to a cabinet near where she pointed, and I squeaked, "This one?" My teacher stormed out of her desk, marched over, pulled my arm toward the right place, and said, "Drawer! Drawer!" I was mortified. Then a boy in my class laughed. And I think that made my teacher realize she had gone too far. She told the boy it wasn't funny and that he had to do whatever I asked him to do. Then she turned to me, softened her voice, and asked me to tell him to do something, but to tell him in Spanish. I don't remember what I told him to do, but I do remember him not doing it and me smiling.
So there you go. There's your America's racist. Whites are racist. But on the other hand, if that teacher's still teaching, she's probably trying to turn the kids gay. And as a member of the Evil Teachers Union, which is preventing choice for black students to get good educations. So this woman, she wasn't political as a child. Her parents were conservative. She goes off to college and goes hard to the left. And they're not your typical American family. They're not your typical immigrant family. The dad was an IT worker in Mexico. His company wanted to transfer him to another location. That location happened to be in the United States. So they did it all legally, and he's educated and had a job before he even came. And I don't think how they look is super mestizo. But the mom feels strongly that abortion is basically murder, so that caused some strife. The dad is kind of like, everyone should get a job and work hard, not, you know, live off of the government with high taxes, which I think wasn't a big deal until Trump came around, and then I think she bought into the Trump's racist. There's nothing more evil than racism. Therefore, Trump is evil. Everyone who votes for Trump is evil. She has cognitive dissonance because she knows her parents are not evil, but she and her friends in Seattle talk and joke about how evil Trump supporters are, but then it gives her a little bit of unease knowing where she comes from. Not Mexico. That would probably make her proud, but a conservative family. But the dad says something in the podcast. Here's a clip.
No, we used to have big disagreements about welfare, I think in the 90s and into, you know, so whenever it was some system, you know, that I just thought, you know, it's not working. And so we need to do other things, or we need to strengthen the way that we give people help in a public way, which for me means like the government does it. So that's the way I think of it. And so I've seen our disagreements sometimes come around that, and whether it is like, you know, 2020 and racism and things like that. There's been disagreements about how bad is this problem and how much sort of radical steps should be taken to address it that I think we disagree. But let's move on to, we already said a couple things. What's been hard about having big political disagreements in our family? What have been the challenges for you and the toughest moments?
I always felt like I was a little afraid that those disagreements could break our relationship. So I probably tried not to be too adamant about trying to make my point. But like, you might remember that time when I asked you if we were ever going to be prevented from seeing our grandkids, because I heard some stories that people were having that situation in their families, and I didn't want any of that to happen. Mm-hmm. So
that was the first time I realized that you really were afraid of that when you said that. It surprised me to hear it. Like, oh, he really does worry.
Yeah.
The hardest.
It's scary to be a conservative dad. It sounds like he's still scared. I mean, she's got him over a fucking barrel. She went to college. They told her a bunch of false things about police attacking black people. She didn't go look it up in the Washington Post database like I did to double check that it's all horseshit. And she can take the kid away. And you can hear in his voice that he's scared. And in her voice, she's not scared. I mean, hey, she's in control of the kid. She can do what she wants. I mean, she makes her money hosting a podcast put on by Braver Angels, which is a anti-partisan organization. So I guess they'll be okay. But it just makes me think, like, is there anything more evil than shunning, you know, disowning your family? I mean, there's stories of kids in, I think, China, probably Russia, you know, turning their parents in and the parents being killed. And people on the right do it. I think, you know, there's certain, you know, churches that are bordering on, well, no, that are like cults, where you either do it exactly the way they like it, otherwise everyone shuns you. I think that usually happens to the younger ones. A lot of times they kick the boys out. They have a use for the girls. But why would someone do something so evil? You know, that evil thing, some other evil thing. It's fear. And I had a little thought process about it, you know, fear versus anger. And then my initial thing was, oh, it's fear. How stupid. So let's take it to the extreme. You know, human history, tribes killing other tribes, you know, individuals killing other individuals. It seems like if you do it out of anger, then, you know, it's not okay. And it doesn't last a long time. You know, you get mad, you kill someone, you know, you're probably going to jail, but you know, maybe it's in the olden days and so you're the chief or whatever and you don't go to jail. But it doesn't start like a long-term, I don't know, you know, genocide. You just, you know, you're not angry for that long of a time. You know, are you going to be mad at that one tribe across the mountain for a decade and kill them the whole time? No. But you can be afraid of a tribe on the other side of the mountain and kill them for a decade or, you know, 100 years. So I was like, you know, oh, there are, people are afraid of Donald Trump, right? They're afraid of Donald Trump. That's why the media threw away, you know, decades and decades of telling the truth. They just threw that in a trash can, took a diarrhea shit on top of it because Donald Trump is such an existential threat. Who cares about all that? Now is the time to spend that credibility. Department of Justice is impartial about things. Well, this is the time to, you know, we've done that long enough. Donald Trump is a threat. Anyways, I've said all that before. I think it is stupid to be, well, I think you're wrong to be afraid of Donald Trump that much, but let's look at it from an evolutionary perspective. I think in the past, if one tribe was afraid of another tribe, that other tribe probably was going to come kill him. Like, straight up, in the old days, fear was much more justified. You know, you could starve to death at any time. You could be murdered at any time. I mean, you know, the past was pretty crazy. So, you know, stupid, wrong to be so afraid of something today with modern society. I mean, evolution has created our brain very, very carefully to make sure that we always kill everything that we're afraid of, because that thing is going to come and kill us. And then you just change it with a little bit of modern technology and society, very hard to turn that off. I mean, in the old days, your parents are going to have different politics than your husband and what you're doing with your child. I mean, that may get your child killed. I mean, basically, the people are like, oh, we can all get along and my parents believe in whatever, the God under the sea, and we believe in the God in the sky and we'll all get along. No, everyone who had that kind of DNA, they died and did not pass it on. So we got that going for us. It seems like abortion has been in the news lately. Like, no particular big thing, but just every week or two there's something about abortion. Like, the anti-immigrant party in Poland lost because they were anti-abortion. The Republicans just elected a Speaker of the House who's super anti-abortion, which may be political suicide. Actually, let's talk about that. So, Republican politicians, not voters, the politicians are super pro-war. They love a proxy war. They love the war with Ukraine. And they love giving money to the rich. And they don't give a shit about abortion, but they say they do so that people will vote for them. And basically, they will say that they like Donald Trump because they want to get reelected, but they hate Donald Trump. Donald Trump cannot be trusted to do maximum number of proxy wars and, you know, military industrial complex, and it turns out Biden gives money to the rich better than Trump ever could. So I don't think the Republicans don't want to win. They want to lose. They want Biden to win. They don't want to have to take any votes. They don't want to control the House, and they don't want Trump to win. Now that's all probably a fact. Here's the speculation. Well, I should say, they do hate Democrats. That's also true. You can have multiple conflicting things in your head or in your opinions. They don't like Biden, they just like what he does. And they don't like Trump, and they don't like what Trump does. But it looks like abortion is the way that Republicans and right-wingers around the world, that's the thing that makes them lose elections. And so, go get yourself a super abortion guy. He's a evangelical Christian who would like to roll back gay marriage or something. Mike Johnson, good name. No one's ever heard of him. The only thing about him, basically, there's only two things that are known about him, if you even know that much, which is that he's a real nice guy in person, and he's crazy against abortion and gay marriage. So anyways, if you want to put the two political suicide things front and center so that Republicans get crushed in this coming election, he's the perfect guy for that. But okay, back to abortion. So I had this thought. In America, out of wedlock births have just been getting more and more common over the last, 60 years, roughly. And it depends on your race and stuff like that. Like, black kids are now 70% out of wedlock. White kids are 20%, which both of those are giant increases from what it used to be. And so I wonder if out of wedlock births went up a whole bunch when abortion was made legal. And actually, now that I think about it, maybe it should be the opposite way. Oh, it's legal, so you don't accidentally have the kids. Anyways, long story short, abortion and out of wedlock births are basically not related. But the thing that made black women have out-of-wedlock births, it was the civil rights movement. So basically, you know, like 63 or something, boom, just shoots through the roof all the way up until... It's actually dropped in the last maybe 5 years, I think, for all races. I mean, just a little bit, not changing much. Anyways, long story short, hypothesis. Legalized abortion and out-of-wedlock births are related. Conclusion, no, they're not. The federal government released crime statistics for 2022 the other week. The main highlight I saw was that black-on-black murders are now 7.5 times as much as white-on-white murders, when before Black Lives Matter, they used to just be 5-1. And those numbers are not accounting for, you know, wealth, income, or age, which blacks are a lot poorer and a lot younger than whites. But if the federal government wanted you to not go, whoa, blacks commit murder 7.5 times as much as whites, you know, 750%, they could control for wealth, age, whatever they want. They could do that stuff, but apparently the end result numbers would still not look good, so they don't do that. Instead, what they do is they try and make it hard to read so that your average citizen cannot just go onto their websites and go, holy crap, that's what it is? They don't do any of the math for you. They're just like, here's some numbers. Hope you haven't taken a math class in 30 years. These require division. Ooh, scary. So crime stats, they used to come from like an FBI webpage. It was called the Uniform Crime Report. They've changed it now. I'm just going to say it's the feds. I can't tell if it's the FBI or the Department of Justice, or they're all getting involved with it now. But I think from 2019 to 2020, they were going to update and make their crime stats much more robust and accurate. And then luckily for them, COVID hit and they didn't do shit. Black Lives Matter caused the murder of 10,000 black people. As I see these new stats coming out, it does not make me change my opinion on that at all. I'm more certain that is accurate. But basically, they were changing the way they're doing it, and then no one was going to work. That's 2020, fine. And then 2021, oh, we forgot that year too. And then I think they're like, okay, this is far enough past Black Lives Matter. People are not going to be easily putting 2 and 2 together and calling us racist for putting out crime stats. I believe there was a meeting with like black leaders and Joe Biden right after Joe Biden became the president, and their discussion was about, you know, should police departments and the federal government work together to create much more robust crime statistics so everyone in America can know exactly what's going on? And they all decided, no, that would be a terrible idea. That information should not be put out easily. But I guess we have stats again, so people can put numbers to their punditry, so that's good. I'll put some links in the description to the feds thing where you can look at the exact numbers, or to a guy on Twitter who created graphs so that you can visualize it and understand it easily. That's the thing the feds do not want you to be able to do. But I'm still waiting to see if anyone besides me has the balls to say, it wasn't COVID, it wasn't the police pulling back, it was Black Lives Matter that caused that giant increase that led to the murder of 10,000 black people. And quick reminder, the increase happened in every city across America, and every city across America did not have police departments doing the same thing, so it ain't the cops. And then people say, well, it's COVID. Well, COVID started in February. The murder increase started in June. George Floyd was killed at the end of May. And COVID happened in every other country, and they didn't have the murder increase over there either. Look through the history of this pod if you want to hear all the numbers and a more detailed explanation. But basically, the truth is racist, so they try and hide the truth. You might think, oh, the truth. This is the thing that we should look at so we can help black people. Like, oh, it turns out the teachers' unions are destroying another generation of inner-city black youth. But anyways, no, we don't want to look at that. They paid too much to the Democrats. I mean, basically, for powerful people on the left, in the media, in the government, etc., they can either find out that their friends are doing evil stuff to black people, Or they can make false accusations of racism against people on the right, and obviously they choose the latter. But having some stats, it may eventually change all that. And then Saturday's episode of The Morning Wire, super highly recommend that podcast, 15-minute news roundup with a center-right perspective. They're talking about this study of murder by state. I think it was called three-way or third-way or something. But Democrat politicians have been going around saying 8 of the 10 most murderous states are red states. I think, you know, you're a red state if the state voted for Trump, blue Biden. And the podcast plays a clip of Gavin Newsom comparing California to Florida and saying how wonderful California is. But so Heritage, which is a right-wing think tank, they did a study and they broke it down by county. And then it turns out all the most murderous counties voted for Biden. So murderous states voted for Trump, murderous counties voted for Biden. And both of those things are true. And basically that's because a lot of the southern states are the most murderous. Now, they have the highest percentage of black people, but overall, they still do vote for Trump. But then if you break it down by county, the counties that have a lot of black people voted for Biden and are the ones that have a lot of murder. Anyways, I mean, the third way study, they were like, exactly how do we, and they finagled the numbers a few different ways, but they're like, how can we make it so that red states are the most murderous? They had their result, and then they went and found the data to back it up afterwards, you know, the opposite of what you're supposed to do. And then the Heritage ones, I mean, they probably did basically the same thing. They're like, well, we know it's black people. We don't want to get called racist, so let's just go by county. That's a good proxy for black people. And so, you know, if you actually wanted to reduce murder in America, you would control for race, who knows what, you know, socioeconomic, you control for all sorts of things and try and figure out, you know, what policies actually increase or decrease murder. Anyways, no one is interested in doing that. Everyone is interested in attacking their enemies and not being called racist, which I agree. Those are two fun things, but all the Black Lives Matter murders, BLMMs, I think they've basically been lost to the sands of time. What's going to be interesting is, so if you look at the graph of murders, it's going along, you know, up and down, but it's basically flat. And then it shoots way the hell up because of George Floyd in 2020. And then it's basically flat after that. So it's just, you know, there's a whole new baseline, basically. But now that we have our much higher new baseline, murders are actually going down a little tiny bit. So that's what you're going to hear from politicians, is they're going to be like, 2023 is, you know, murders are down 3% from 2022. It can be a whole lot of comparing numbers to numbers that are not before George Floyd. And then a lot of other politicians just keeping their mouths shut because they don't want to get called racist. So there was a shooting this week. White guy shot 18 in Maine. Turns out all the people shot were white. Some of them are deaf, so the media is playing that up. I mean, I don't think this guy had any clue there was any deaf people in there. But anyways, initially, it wasn't clear, you know, who did it and exactly why. Or I think, no, they had the video, so they knew it was a white guy. Didn't know who the victims were the first day. And so, you know, I woke up to NPR, and they were hoping. They're like, please, Lord, please let the victims be black. I will give up my firstborn. I will cut off a nut. I will give you my left arm. Lord, if you will just make sure that every person who got a bullet through their body and fell over bleeding out until they stopped breathing and were dead as hell, if you will just make all of them black, please, Lord. That's how much I love black people, Lord. Anyways, here's a clip of how they talked about it. You can read between the lines yourself.
Bowling alley, and authorities released surveillance images of a white man who was wearing a brown sweatshirt. And
you know, one thing I know about Lewiston is that in 1965, Muhammad Ali fought there against Sonny Liston. It was a heavyweight rematch. What kind of a place is Lewiston, Maine?
Yeah, it's the second largest city in Maine. It's got a population of about 40,000 people. It's roughly 45 minutes away from Portland. It's a very diverse place. Many immigrants live here, including from Somalia. There's also a sizable population of French Canadians who've settled here.
And I was looking at Google News to see if there's any other mass shootings besides the one in Maine. And let me just read you a little headline and subheadline from, I think, NBC News. Halloween weekend shootings leave at least 6 dead, over 40 injured after multiple mass shootings. Mass shootings in Texarkana, Indianapolis, Tampa, and Chicago are being investigated by authorities. Don't know anything more about them than that. Must mean that they're all black. None of the shooters are white, otherwise we'd hear about that one. It's that thing. Once again, one white shooter kills more people than 4 black mass shootings. I mean, times 3. Well, the main shooter, he like taught shooting in the Army Reserve or something. And they didn't stop him. He just stopped, went and hid out for a couple days, and then shot himself. That one could have been a lot worse. What do you say if you're on the side of the FBI and the CIA as they use social media to rig an election? Basically, what do you say when you're on the side that is damaging American democracy? There's only one thing you can do. I mean, you can't tell the truth. You just flip the script. You say the other side is the threat to democracy. You colluded with the FBI and the CIA to rig an election. Oh yeah? Well, you're a threat to democracy. And that kind of whatever. If you got the numbers, you can make it stick. Anyways, the beginning of this week's Left, Right, and Center made me chuckle. Here's a clip.
Everybody, it's David Green here. I am your host here on Left, Right, and Center, and we are in a place that was essential to the fight for American democracy, the city of Boston, Massachusetts, and we are joined by a fabulous live audience at the public radio station here that is near and dear, WBUR. Thank you all for being here. We really, really appreciate it. I'm here along with our regular Left, Right, and Center panel to look at some of the pillars of our democracy. Of course, a democracy that was forged right here in Boston. I don't have to tell any of you, some of the pillars remain under threat.
I've been wanting to put in a quote, you know, some word stuff. So here's one. The idea is to do it every week. I'm sure it'll last exactly 1 week. So Primrose Path. I looked up what a primrose is. It's a flower. I think it's a flower that was popular in England back in the day, or maybe it still is. And the way you hear it used is someone will be leading someone else down the primrose path. It's kind of like the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But if you lead someone down the primrose path, it's all going to seem wonderful, but then when you get to the end, it's actually going to be terrible. Like, you know, the primrose path of Black Lives Matter. It looks like it's going to be racial justice, but the end result is black men murdering each other to the tune of an extra 10,000. So anyways, Primrose Path, I'll just read from the internet. Coined by William Shakespeare in 1609 in the Hamlet play, where he said, "Himself the primrose path of dalliance treads." I hate Shakespeare. I mean, that isn't even... You'd have to think about that sentence a long time to even get that you could lead someone down a primrose path. But I think it's in there somehow. Himself the primrose path of dalliance treads. It's kind of like Yoda. Stupid you are, instead of you are stupid. Or maybe it's like Spanish where you say house red instead of red house. Casa Rojo. But it's a noun. An easy and pleasant life, a self-indulgent or hedonistic life, such a life that leads to damnation. That's definition 1. 2. A deceptively easy or appealing course of action that leads one astray or into error. Or 3. The life of prostitution. Alright, so 2017, we had Me Too, that's women. 2020, we had Black Lives Matter, that's black people. 2022, we had transgender, blah, blah, that's trans people. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, we had gay marriage. Anyways, and right now, we've got Israel and Jews. And so I'm trying to predict what is the next left-wing marching in the streets, possibly being violent, not if it's a woman thing. Well, I looked up protected group. Let me read that out. So this is protected group from the 1964 Civil Rights Act, but, you know, there's other lists like this. Anyways, race, religion, national origin, age, sex, whether or not you're pregnant, family status, I'm not sure on that, disability status, veteran status, genetic information, not sure on that one. But so we did race, that was Black Lives Matter. Religion, can people start hating Christians in a way that they go marching in the streets? I'm thinking maybe anti-Christian stuff could be next somehow. I'm not sure exactly how. National origin, I mean, that's immigrants. I could see that one, yeah. I think, yeah, anti-Christian, anti-people who want to close the border, I could see that one. Well, anyways, if I remember, I might do a poll for Spotify listeners to see which thing the lefties are going to go march in the streets about. And I'll try and make it where you can vote for more than one of them, you know, like, I don't know. There's this YouTuber I watch where she's always like, I'm going to do a poll. I think it's this. And then she does the poll, and then everyone votes for the thing that she just said she thinks it is. So, and I've already said the things that I kind of think it is. So if you vote for more than one of them, then maybe it'll be something I didn't say. You'll be like, yeah, you're right about Christians, but it could be blah, blah. Maybe boomers. I don't know. Oh, and Eric left a comment telling me I was doing a good job. Thanks, Eric. I think Eric's done that a few weeks in a row, so that's friend of the pod, Eric. Oh, and I recently learned the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the one that prevents discrimination on the basis of race, gender, etc., it only applies to, in employment, it only applies to companies with 15 or more employees. I don't know if that's just so you can keep your little tiny place like a mom and pop shop and only hire people in your immediate family or what. But it's in the law. Someone mentioned it. I was like, is that true? I looked it up. It was true. Disney pushed back a couple of their upcoming woke movies. I mean, we haven't seen the movies yet to see how woke they are. But anyways, Pixar has a movie called Elio where a young Hispanic boy becomes the emperor of the universe or something. And then Snow White, where they race-swapped Snow White for a Hispanic girl, and all the dwarves are correct height. Sorry, normal height. And movie studios in general have been pushing their movies into the future, release date-wise, because of the writer's strike, but mostly the actor's strike. And they're saying if the actors and the movie companies don't come to an agreement in the next week or something, that a whole season of TV is going to be missed. I'm rooting for that. That sounds far-fetched. We'll see. I'm sure that was a year of a lot of wokeness. Let's just stop everything for a year, see how woke we are then. Sounds good to me. A guy I was listening to, he thinks Disney is scared because of the dwarf thing, because they've flip-flopped a couple times. It's like, okay, putting dwarfs in your movie, that's racist against dwarfs. And then it was like, why are you taking away the only jobs for little people in Hollywood? That's racist against little people. And the studio execs are like, which way do we go? We're getting called racist against dwarfs either way. But I think it's because Disney is scared to release their movies now. I think their last big movie that they can't change the release date is The Marvels, which comes out in 2 weeks, I think the 17th or the 10th. That's right. So we get a last little bit of enjoying woke movies going down in flames, possibly. On the 10th, we've got the Marvels, which is Disney's Marvel movie with a very diverse bunch of female superheroes fighting a diverse female villain. And then the week after that is the new Hunger Games reboot, which stars the Latina, who is also playing Snow White, and likes to talk about how she hates Snow White, the old movie, and thinks that it's racist and sexist and a whole bunch of other things. But I think two out of the last three Marvel movies have flopped or massively underperformed. The Black Little Mermaid, massively underperformed. The last Pixar movie flop. The last Disney cartoon, mega flop. Strange Worlds. No one even knows that that's a Disney movie or that it exists. But it's supposed to be, you know, in a long line of Little Mermaid, Aladdin, The Lion King, and here's Strange Worlds with lots of gay characters. But anyways, The Marvels is coming out so soon that people can look at ticket pre-sales and see that it's, well, yeah, it's not doing good. It's, you never know about the legs. If it's a great movie, which the early word is that it is not a great movie. I think that, you know, the director is a black woman, and I think she's made comments saying that she didn't actually direct it. It's not looking good. I think, you know, what she meant was Marvel movies are, the director is in a little box and told exactly what to do, so it's not really her movie. It's not really her fault. Although her two previous movies that were both flops. She did the remake of Candyman. I loved that original one, but actually Candyman 2 back in the 90s. Anyways, I've mentioned polling. Something like 20% of America has a very unfavorable view of Disney. 40% is, you know, somewhat unfavorable or very unfavorable. And I think Disney's scared. Their movies haven't been good. I mean, it's kind of hard to say, but is it because all the movies are bad? Or, you know, a large percentage of them are bad? If you make 9 out of 10 bad ones and people don't go watch the one good one. But Disney's scared that the Disney name is just turning movies into flops when they wouldn't otherwise be. It's the backlash against the woke and all the race swapping. And so, you know, like me, I'm like, yeah, cancel the TV season. Let's see how woke things are a year from now. And I think Disney is like, let's not put out anything for a year. Let's see how much people hate Disney for being too woke in a year. I mean, the movies come out like the middle of next year, or that they were, so now it's the middle of the year after that. And we don't know if it's true at all, but there's rumors going around that the next, I guess after Snow White, the classic Disney cartoon that they're going to turn into a live action is Hercules, and it's going to be Michael B. Jordan, anyways, a black actor. And so I hope they go through with that. That will be funny. Because I guess, you know, here's what's going to happen. People hate Disney. Their movies are going to flop either way. If they switch and stop being woke, then they'll be like, look at this, non-woke, people hate non-woke movies. It's going to be, no, we hate Disney movies because they used to be woke. Anyway, so hopefully they keep being woke. That way, when people hate them, it'll be easy to ascribe hatred to wokeness. And the Black Little Mermaid, it actually did all right in America. The huge floppiness of it was overseas. And I think, we don't know. You know, what the hell is it like to live in another country? I don't know. I don't know what it's like to live in a different state. But it seems like overseas are getting tired of the race swapping. And so, I think, you know, even if you live in wherever, Timbuktu, I think even there, you know that Hercules is a classic white character from Greek mythology. So all across the world, they'll be like, oh yeah, that's a race swapper. And overseas audiences seem to have my back, the Anti-Woke Podcast host back. Movie Five Nights at Freddy's had a $78 million opening weekend. Absolutely huge. Movie cost $20 million. It's the second most successful video game movie ever after Super Mario Brothers, which also came out this year. And it's a PG-13 horror movie set at like an evil Chuck E. Cheese's where the animatronic characters come to life and kill you. But it's PG-13, so it's not bloody. And young people showed up huge. It was, you know, like 13 to 24 was over 80% of the viewers. And people dressed up as the animatronic things. It was kind of like Barbenheimer. People were going in groups and sometimes dressing up. And Hispanics showed up absolutely huge, 40%. Whites whited around like they always do at the movies at 37%. Blacks didn't go for it. I would have thought Asians would go for it, but they didn't. So people are tired of comic book movies. Are video game movies going to be the new thing? And basically, white boys in their teens read comic books, and then when they got about 35 to 40 years old, they started making comic book movies, and it took over the world. And so I think video game age group stuff matches about that. So the white boys who grew up with video games are now, you know, now they're going to be the best directors and whatnot. And Hollywood's going to hire black women to direct video game movies because they're like, oh, anyone can do it. Or we, anyways, and those will be flops. Probably have the same thing. Anime, I think anime is a little bit behind video games. You know, that's 5 years from now. Although I guess Netflix is coming out with a Pokemon TV show that's supposed to be really good. I think for kids. And there was a Pokemon movie, Detective Pokemon, that flopped. Came out, I don't know, probably 2 years ago. I mean, I don't know what you think of when you think of Pokemon, but the movie was about a black man who was a detective. Plus, there were some Pokemon thrown in. Basically, I grew up with comic books, loved them to death. Every comic book movie, like, had nothing to do with the comic books that I grew up loving, and I was always pissed off about it. And so that's how the video game movies have been, but now it looks like people are realizing, oh, make the video game movie like the video game. Maybe get the creator of the video game to come in and give their input and tell you you're doing it wrong when you're race swapping everyone. Anyway, that's what the Japanese video game makers say. And I put a couple links in the description to YouTube. One of them is for the trailer for a movie called Suitable Flesh. Some sort of horror movie. I don't think the movie is supposed to be that good, but it has a phenomenal trailer, so you might check that out. It's like a, they're making it like an 80s trailer. It has kind of that voiceover, you know, in a town forgotten by time, one man couldn't take it anymore. And then the other link is to a clip from the new South Park, where they did a whole movie about how Disney sucks, and they race swapped the four young boys from South Park. And if you know Cartman, he's the fat one who's always cursing a bunch. Like, he's a black woman, stuff like that. It's pretty funny. You might check it out. George Floyd is back in the news. There's some sort of workplace discrimination lawsuit in Minnesota. He was killed in Minneapolis. And I think it's a female DA bringing the lawsuit against the state or something, and there's juicy tidbits about George Floyd in there. It sounds like some or one or more of the prosecutors who were supposed to charge the three other guys besides the knee on the neck cop didn't think those other three cops were guilty of any crimes. They didn't want to charge them, and they resigned and, I don't know, put it into writing that they don't, whatever, they don't think that those people should be charged, and they're not going to charge people who shouldn't be charged. Anyways, it got kicked up to the Attorney General of Minnesota, which I think is a elected position Democrat, who said charge them all. And three cops got, I don't know, 2 to 5 years each. But basically, it was prosecutions based on politics, not the law. And same thing's going on with the Department of Justice and Hunter Biden, where they're charging him or not charging him or charging him a certain way, basically to let him off the hook and to try and protect him from a possible Trump DOJ later on. And so basically it's the question of, what do you do when prosecutors are making their decisions based on politics? I don't even know if it's in the Constitution or in the law that they're not supposed to do that. I think we can all agree that they're not supposed to. I'm not sure. I don't think they're breaking any laws. Cops have something called qualified immunity. I don't know a lot about this, but I believe prosecutors have something called full immunity. I think judges and prosecutors were the ones who were trying to figure out what kind of immunity cops and prosecutors and judges get. And they're like, give the cops a pretty good one. Give us a really good one. And I'm a 2010 liberal. For many decades, I don't know, up until George Soros and his DAs lately, the problem, or at least what people thought the problem was that prosecutors were elected, and basically no one's going to throw you out of office if you convict 100 people for way more than they deserve. 100 people, 100 years each, who cares? The only reason you get thrown out of office is if one of the people you let go, you know, goes and rapes and murders a white girl. So the idea was that politics makes them overcharge constantly, although it's not on specific cases. Although, I mean, who knows? In the South, in the 50s, who knows? But now, I guess the shoe is on the other foot, and left-leaning prosecutors are, I mean, I don't know. They're letting all the criminals go, and it's turning blue states into shitholes. I think that is, the voters wanted that, and I think that's justice. There's a mechanism to fix that. The voters will say we don't want that when they get tired enough of it. So that's fine. But then these, like, little individual cases, you know, I don't know, Trump, a lot of the Trump things, but, you know, just, oh, the cop who was in the background with his back turned to the knee on the neck the whole time, you know, it doesn't seem fair. It gets down to this thing where Stalin, I think it's attributed to Stalin, but one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. And they did some study. I mean, it's a social science study, so it's not going to, you know, the replication crisis means it's probably horseshit. But anyways, I still think there's something to it, which was, I don't know, I think they made up stories to tell to people and then ask them how sad it made them feel. And so it was something like, you know, a 6-year-old blonde girl was killed in a car accident. And people were like, oh, that's terrible. And then they're like, a 6-year-old blonde girl and her 13-year-old brother were killed in a car accident. And people were like, you know, they felt bad. And then it was like, you know, 2 children and 2 parents died in a car accident. And all of a sudden people were not feeling so sad. And then finally, you know, a whole bus full of people went over the cliff, including 7 under the age of 18 and 13 above, you know, 13 adults. I mean, you know, George Floyd died with a knee on the neck and there's a video versus, you know, black people are murdering each other to the tune of thousands a year, every year. No one gives a shit about the second. I guess, you know, you can just put yourself into one person's shoes. You can't imagine what it's like to be 1,000 people. So it's upsetting to have these prosecutions of individual cops who shouldn't be prosecuted. It's like false rape accusations. Like, men can really, I think even rapists, even the rare or maybe rare rapist out there is like, oh, these false rape accusations, they're terrifying. We can all feel it, you know. Moms of sons, they're terrified. Have fun at college, not too much fun. But the question is there any mechanism to stop DAs from basing their stuff on politics? And I don't think there is. I don't, you know, Constitution on down, I don't think there's anything to do it. Well, if you're doing it for a protected group, if you're doing it because of race, sex, etc., then there are laws. But otherwise, it's kind of, yeah, it's like gerrymandering. You can't do it based on race, but you can do it based on political party. And it keeps making court cases come up in the South because every black person votes Democrats, so Republicans are like, we're just gerrymandering the Democrats. And Democrats are like, you're gerrymandering black people. I guess, you know, it could be, we're throwing these cops into prison because they're not black, so it's based on race. But currently in America, they do not prosecute racism against whites. Or I think some of them were Laotian or something. No, Hmong. Where's that from? And I'm sure it's not pronounced that. Hmong, however you say that. Well, however you say it, should have been black. Probably could have got off. Although they're starting to prosecute black cops over this stuff too. Well, if anything could be done, it would have to be the Department of Justice doing it, which obviously Biden's ain't going to do nothing. He's like, you know, lock them up. Lock up everyone who's not black involved in stuff. And then the Trump DOJ is not going to want to get called. We got called racist already. We don't want to add any fuel to that fire. So I would not want to be those cops. This ain't going to get them off, I don't think. The Supreme Court did a stay on the injunction stopping the Biden administration from talking to social media. What does all that mean? Basically, if you want the Biden administration to stop censoring free speech on the internet, then whatever. They're not going to stop. The Supreme Court said they can keep doing it for now. And they are going to take up the case, so maybe they will change their mind on it. But it was an example of the 333 court that we have now. It used to be, well, people thought it was going to be the three liberals versus the six conservatives. But instead, we keep getting three liberals, three conservatives, and then the other three. What is that other three? I guess you call them conservative, but they vote with the liberals. So whatever that makes them. I don't know. Basically, I would like them to vote with the, you know, along with the conservative lines. It's a little weird. I have to remind myself, I'm not a conservative, and I'm not pro-life. Which basically means I don't get what I don't know. But I want them to vote conservative, but I'd like to keep things pro-choice, although I don't want the Supreme Court to do it. I don't know. It makes things a little complicated. But let's put it this way. So one of the, maybe two, one, I guess, maybe George Bush's only pick, he votes liberal a whole bunch. And then two out of the three picks that Trump did vote liberal a bunch. And I think the reason why was because they were basically picked to be pro-life. They're like, I don't care how you are on anything else as long as you're pro-life. And if you use that as your criteria, what you get is someone who is pro-life but votes liberal on everything else. Well, I'm a liberal, votes with the liberals on everything else. I mean, they softened the affirmative action thing a whole bunch to the point where it's just going to have to be many court cases going into the future instead of saying no discrimination on the basis of race ever, period, going forward, even against whites. I mean, we don't know, but I think the three people who Trump appointed, I bet they don't like Trump. I think they think he's an existential threat. So they're going to be like, you know, the government and social media should get together to rig this election because Trump's an existential threat. Oh my God, he's coming next year. You know, I lied to his face and said I think he's all right when he nominated me, but I went to the dentist the other day for a teeth cleaning. And me and the dental hygienist, we ended up talking a lot, which is like, you know, I'd hold up a finger so she'd take her hands out of my mouth so I could say something. And I would say something interesting, and then she would stop cleaning, and as she thought about the interesting thing that I said and then responded to it, and then she would go back to cleaning. The whole thing took an hour. I think, you know, if you get down to business, probably a 35-minute job normally. And I will say, if you live in Oregon and you're poor, it's all free. Pretty cool. But I've been going to the same hygienist for a few years now, and we're always friendly. And she has interesting opinions. Like, I don't know if I would dump all my craziest anti-woke podcast opinions on her, but, well, she's not woke. I know her well enough to know that. I mean, she was telling how her sister or sister-in-law or something, the kid got cancer and they moved to Puerto Rico so they didn't have to give her chemo. I don't know. And she seemed to think that was, I mean, I don't know if she'd do that for her kid, but that was a reasonable thing because of invasive government controlling your healthcare or something. Oh, yeah. So I went to the dentist. It's in, you know, it's in kind of a hospital type of thing. Anyways, so I went and got vaccinated. And I just went in. It's free because I'm poor. And I'm like, I'm here to get vaccinated. They're like, which one? I'm like, whichever you got. So anyways, got the flu, got COVID also. I don't really care. There's pressure. There's pressure on me from people I know to go get vaccinated. I'm not against getting vaccinated, but I probably would have skipped them all. But anyways, sometimes you just want other people to shut up. So I got a shot in both arms. And then this led to some good Facebook fodder. I woke up at 2 a.m. shivering, just so deathly cold. Never been so cold in my life. And so I went on Facebook the next morning and I was like, I got both shots. And at 2 a.m. I woke up with the flu and with COVID. And the girls on Facebook all wanted to say something about that. Not really pro-jab or anti-jab or anything political. It just, apparently that's, you know, health. Health stuff is a topic that women like. So they wanted to chime in with something. I think what they were saying was, Put more health content on Facebook, please. You got it, ladies. My BMs are looking a little funny. But anyway, so, hygienist. I'm talking to the hygienist. She's liking the words that are coming out of my mouth. And so I think I'll do a little bit of self-help guru-ing here. If you don't always have something to say, or you don't know what to say, or maybe you're, you know, maybe you could be shy talking to the opposite sex, or maybe just, you know, maybe talking to your coworkers or whatever. If you just would like to talk better, start yourself a podcast. It's easier to say something the second time. And, you know, I think you got to talk about whatever interests you. And, you know, I got like 100, 150 listeners. I imagine exactly zero of them will go out and start a podcast based on my advice. But like, you know, so ladies, I forget, maybe 10% of my listeners are ladies. So, you know, there's 10 to 15 of you out there. I'm just going to pigeonhole all you and say, you know, ladies like healthcare stuff. So, you know, start a podcast with your feelings about healthcare. And men, a certain percentage of them, they're into like business stuff, you know, self-help, business synergy, paradigm shifting, all that horse shit. So start yourself a little podcast talking about your business ideas. You will soon be a hit at the office. Let's talk some business. Getting this stuff from Slate Money Podcast. Taylor Swift is now estimated to be worth $1.1 billion. And I wonder if that makes her the first woman billionaire. Well, the first female billionaire who made the money themselves. I think Steve Jobs' wife, she owns a bunch of Apple, she's a billionaire. Jeff Bezos' ex-wife took half of his Amazon stock, she's rich as hell. Louis Vuitton or some fashion brand in France, I think, is owned by the descendant of the creator, and that's a woman billionaire. And people talk about Kylie Jenner, that's the youngest of the sisters, being a billionaire because she owns a cosmetics company. I don't know exactly. But according to Slate Money, Kylie Jenner is a billionaire according to Forbes, which you can't trust their numbers at all. Whereas Taylor Swift is a billionaire according to Bloomberg, who you can trust. And if you ever do a Google search for celebrity names, like one of the, you know, top 10 suggested things is always net worth, and it always goes to some website that, I don't know, that you believe it, but it can't be trusted, even though you believe it. I mean, like, you know, some of those celebrities have a gambling problem or made bad investments. It never takes that stuff into account. It's like, what do you think they might be worth? Anyways, I think it wasn't too long ago that we had our first black billionaire. I mean, besides someone who runs a country in Africa and steals everything. I think it was the guy who owned Black Entertainment Television. He branched out into stuff. There might be a couple guys like that, like black media, but on the producer side, not the actor side. And then Michael Jordan, he has a gambling problem. He's supposed to be worth a billion. LeBron, rappers, Jay-Z, and then Dr. Dre had his headphone company that got sold to Apple for making him a billionaire. Makes me wonder if, like, is there white sports stars who are billionaires? Maybe in soccer, David Beckham? I think he's the owner of one of the major league soccer teams. He might be getting up there. I guess Tom Brady got $55 million for 20 hours of work promoting that cryptocurrency thing that turned out to be a scam. I mean, they all kind of did, but... And GDP growth came back at 4.9%, which is way higher than anyone thought. You know, if that number goes negative two quarters in a row, that's a recession. So we got the opposite of a recession based on a number that may not actually measure how your life is. I think if you go by, like, you know, what's important to a person, first off, you got to have a job. Second off, can you buy a house? Then buy a car, buy groceries, buy gasoline. You know, maybe higher up is health insurance, college for your kids. Seems like jobs are doing good. Buying a house is fucked. groceries are super expensive. So it's a little debatable. But the thought, you know, here's the anti-woke thought. So the Federal Reserve lowers interest rates or raises them based on GDP and unemployment. When GDP gets low and people don't have jobs, then they lower interest rates. So basically, there's no reason to lower interest rates at all. But here's the question. So we're a year away from the election. The Federal Reserve, it's not controlled directly by the government, but it is appointed by the president, I believe. And that's, and, you know, and it's a lot of them are appointed by Trump. So that, I mean, which doesn't mean shit. Trump appointed a lot of people that absolutely hate him. And so here's the question. If the numbers are in the exact opposite way of lowering interest rates, will the Federal Reserve lower them anyways, right when the election comes around, because they have Trump derangement syndrome? I think they will. I mean, they're all like PhD in economics. So, you know, education, more educated you are, the more likely you are to have Trump derangement syndrome. I'm sure they all support proxy wars in Ukraine, etc. So, you know, they're going to want to keep the Biden ball rolling. And so it will be interesting to see the one supposedly nonpartisan thing turn completely partisan, just like the Department of Justice, just like everything. And the average amount that Americans spend per person on food each week is $70. I think that includes eating out, so you can compare yourself to that. And there was a couple $60 billion oil company mergers this week. Exxon bought some company you never heard of. Chevron did the same. But oil companies are hot, making a lot of money, I guess ever since the Ukraine war. And they were saying there was some famous mutual fund that bought a bunch of, you know, green energy, climate change is coming, you know, get out of oil, get into solar or something. And if you, and it's been around for 15 years, and if you put your money into that, then you made a lot of money. Except for the last 3 years, where oil companies are beating the pants off of climate change stocks. And the woke girl on Slate Money was like, I thought it was going to be like the tobacco companies. You know, they got found out for, you know, they knew that tobacco kills and they were lying about it and a bunch of bad stuff happened to them. And you might remember similar stuff was found out about the oil companies. They knew that climate change was real, I don't know, years ago. But I don't think that's a good analogy or even a good metaphor, because tobacco kills you, whereas oil keeps you alive. You know, would you like to have a warm house when it's 3 feet of snow outside, or would you like to die? And is oil going away? Like America, Europe, they're decreasing, maybe even China, they're decreasing the amount of oil that they use, but all the shithole countries are, they're like, give us more, more, baby. They want to suck from the oil teat. And I don't blame them. You know, they need air conditioning. So Saudi Arabia, they estimate that peak oil will be 2045. So we'll see. And then one of the companies that got bought, that will, Hess Oil Company, never heard of them. But they do a lot of drilling in Guyana. And I was like, oh, some African country. I was like, let me double check. Nope, Guyana is in South America. And I don't know, is French Guiana? I've heard of that. Is that in Africa? Why does Guyana sound African? It does. It's right next to Suriname, which also sounds African, but it's in South America. Basically, the top right of South America is Venezuela, Guyana, Suriname, and then below that is Brazil. I'm not sure where the equator is compared to all those countries. Venezuela is, you know, Hispanic people. They're all moving to America. The south part of Brazil is white people. The north part of Brazil is black people. So basically, Guyana and Suriname, they're like 40% black, 40% Indian. Like dot on the forehead Indian. And then, you know, a little bit Amerindian. Like less than 10%. I mean, they all died of disease centuries ago. But anyways, Guyana is next to Venezuela, which has, I don't know, I think they'd be like the number four oil country in the world after U.S., Russia, and Saudi Arabia, but we don't let them sell oil because we don't like them. So Guyana may be a way to, you know, you like drill sideways to take Venezuela's oil or something. So we'll probably be hearing about wars or coups or somethings in Guyana soon. Let's run through some stats on queerness. So in 4 years, Gen Z has gone from 10% not straight to 20% not straight. And that's actually 2017 to 2021. They may be more queer now. I'm going to be curious to see if it just keeps going up, up, and up, or if it eventually flattens off. You know, when you say 20% of Gen Z, that ain't black, that ain't Hispanic, which young people are in particular Hispanic, but they're also black. Basically, it ain't. Anyway, so it's whites. So, you know, white Gen Z is probably 40, 50% queer, which just basically means all the girls are queer and all the boys ain't. Basically, that's how high schools are. I've said that before. High schools are now over half queer, and it's only the white kids. Anyways, but Gen Z, they're getting out of high school, and they're still some sort of queer. I mean, they're the kind of queer where they get a short haircut and dye it, and then live the life, other than that, of a straight person. Will he call me? Why isn't he calling me? Oh, he called me too many times. And I'm not sure the age, but 60% of young men are single. 30% of young women are single. Do with that what you will. Let's talk war. The muddy season in Ukraine is coming where, I mean, it's a stalemate already, but it's really going to be a stalemate throughout the winter because no one can move in the mud. Russia's trying to take one more city before the mud comes. We'll see if they can do that. Avdiivka, I never heard of it. But things come in threes, you sometimes heard said. And so we got Ukraine. Now we got Israel. Like, you know, what's the third war that can possibly lead to World War III? Is it Taiwan, China coming, or something you never heard of, or maybe we don't get World War III? Now, we dodged a bullet in the Ukraine war so far. Like, we put sanctions on Russia. We thought that would just bring them to their knees. And if you bring Russia to their knees, and we're like, you're going to lose unless you use nukes, then Russia's going to be like, oh, well, we don't want to lose. I guess we'll use nukes. But it's looking like Russia's going to win. It's just going to take a long time. So now the question is America going to let its little brother Ukraine lose? And the blob, that's America's foreign policy establishment that controls all our war stuff. The blob is very invested in Ukraine. They do not want to see Ukraine lose. So, you know, if Russia beats Ukraine, does America start doing a little bit of airstrikes on Russia? You know, just within Ukraine's borders. We're not attacking you, Russia. Don't use nukes. And I think Russia is going to be like, they're going to use nukes on the Ukrainians and be like, hey, America, we're not fighting you either. We're just using nukes within the borders of Ukraine. And then I think America goes, okay, we were just testing you. We were just testing you. You passed the test. We see that you're serious. All right, let's go sign some sort of peace agreement. So that's my current prediction. I mean, you know, it's probably a 20% chance that this happens because you have to have this. You have to have A followed by B followed by C. But it's Russia beats Ukraine. America can't let it go and attacks Russians in Ukraine. And then Russia does nukes in Ukraine. And then we go, all right, good enough. That was, you're serious. Everyone knows who's serious and what's going on. And we call it off. And of course, there's a slight chance in there that someone doesn't call it off or something. And then you get World War III. I don't think we'll go to boots on the ground. It will just be American airstrikes. And then Elon Musk, along with Vivek Ramaswamy and David Sacks, did a Twitter Spaces thing about Israel leading to World War III and how they don't want that the other day. And so Israel's trying to destroy Hamas, but Hamas's older brother is Hezbollah. And then Hezbollah's older brother is Iran. And then Iran's older brother is Russia. And then Russia's older brother is China. And then, of course, there's Israel and their older brother, America. So we're going to see, you know, who wants to jump in to help their little brother. I think everyone's just hoping for a stalemate, and then they don't have to. And maybe Israel is starting their ground invasion, you know, right about the time I release this podcast, or maybe not. People have been speculating on why they've been waiting so long. No one knows. I think if you're going to do it, you want to wait as long as possible. Like, you know, there's the cover story is that we're doing it to save the hostages, although doesn't seem no hostages coming out. But the real reason is I think Hezbollah needs fuel. And so we want to starve Hezbollah of fuel. And the only way to do that is you got to starve the whole place. So basically the world gets madder and madder at Israel the longer the embargo goes on. But the longer the embargo goes on, the better chance, if they have a chance, of taking out Hezbollah. So, I don't know. They're kind of it's a teeter-totter. They got to decide. And I guess when America attacked Iraq for no reason, we were like, we get to attack one country for no reason, and we couldn't decide. We almost attacked Iran instead. But I guess we attacked Iraq because we were like, we're going to roll into Iraq. They're going to greet us with flowers and love us, and then we'll be in a great position to take out Iran. And then, obviously, everything didn't work out like that. But a guy on the All In podcast, he was looking at American weapons and how many years it's going to take to replenish our supplies because we gave them all to Ukraine. And it's like, we're already out of artillery, and it's going to take 5 years to build that back up. Basically, everything, it's going to, you know, the Stinger missiles, all the shoulder-mounted stuff that'll bring down a helicopter or a tank. It's going to take many years to replenish those. The artillery, other kinds of missiles, anti-missile missiles. And so, I mean, I don't know if America's going to do this, but a similar thing is happening with Ukraine and with Russia, and probably about to happen with Israel, and Israel's a nuclear country. If you run out of all your non-nuclear weapons, do you just say, oh, well, we give up, or do you use your nukes? Well, we may get to find out on that one. And I've been watching a number of videos about how you fight terrorists in tunnels. And the answer is not well. If I remember, I'll put some links in the description about tunnels. There's a guy on YouTube, CivDiv, C-I-V-D-I-V. He was an American soldier, maybe the Marines. He was in a tunnel. He knows about the tunnel. He knows about fighting, tunnel fighting, but from being inside the tunnel. He was on the side of the Kurds, I think in northern Syria, when Turkey was bombing them. And he was like, yeah, we just hang out in our tunnels, you know, we had TV, we had electricity, we'd be eating our ramen noodles, you know, hearing the bombs go off in the surface and laughing about it. Oh, and whenever a new guy, American soldier, was stationed in the tunnels with them, the second day they would turn off all the lights, they'd set off a bomb, I think somewhere near the entrance or whatever, and they'd tell the new guy, we're under attack, and then they'd see what the new guy would do. Like, not to scare the new guy, but to test that he knew the right stuff. I guess the first day they tell you what to do if you're under attack, and the second day they test it on you. And they do it for several hours. And then they go, ah, oh, never mind, it was just a drill. And apparently American, generals have gone over to Israel telling Israel that it's harder, fighting the Palestinians is going to be harder than they think. It's like, we've been fighting in Iraq. You don't even know how hard it is. Let me tell you, brother, how hard this stuff is. Which seems crazy to me. I think you'd think Israel would know. But anyway, supposedly America's going to tell them. And the Israel war, it kind of seems like it's coming down to who's ever willing to break the laws of war. Then you win. In Israel, they may have to break some rules just to scare Hamas and make them simmer down now. Someone was saying that the biggest, fanciest, giantest hospital in Gaza, underneath it is where Hamas stores all their weapons. And if that's true, it's like, you know, what do you recommend Israel does? People are like, you got to be nice to the Palestinians. Yeah, but what does Israel do? Well, I'm just telling you what you don't do. You don't be mean to the Palestinians. Yeah, but what do? And the answer is, you don't tell Israel, you just criticize. You don't say what you should do, because the real answer is you know, all the Jews either get the fuck out, or if the ones who want to stay can all be killed. That seems to be what, you know, woke people, the left, Muslim worlds, I don't know, a lot. I don't, you know, how many billion peoples would like the Jews to just lay down and die? I think it's more than a billion, might be a few. I wonder how, like, Japan or India or China, how they feel. They probably like, Jews, Muslims, they're all crazy. I don't, you know, can't tell the difference. They all look the same to me. Or maybe they have opinions. I don't know. I watch a lot of Japanese anime, and they love America. They'll have settings that are basically America. They like Germany. They'll do, like, Rhinelander, you know, running through the fields with the flowers, like Sound of Music, kind of old Germany stuff. But I never see any Muslims or Jews in their anime. And someone else I was listening to was talking about, so Gaza has 2 million Palestinians. They're not all of them, but most of them, they're classified as refugees. I mean, I guess refugees from the 1948 war. So anyways, I don't know if that's exactly right, but they're refugees there, a couple million of them. I think Jordan has a few million Palestinian refugees. I think maybe some other Arab countries have Palestinian refugees. But some of these refugees, it's been like four generations of them are born in a different country. Definitely some of the Jordan ones. Like there's Palestinian babies in Jordan where their dad is a Palestinian refugee born in Jordan. And your grandpa's a Palestinian refugee who's born in Jordan. And your great-grandpa is a Palestinian refugee who was born in Jordan, never known nothing but living in Jordan. And so if you're a college kid in America who hates Israel and whatever, you've wrapped it up in your Black Lives Matter worldview, what you don't want to think about is all these refugees living in Jordan. Basically, they're only useful to put pressure on Israel. Right? It's not who you love. There's no love from anyone in any direction. It's who you hate. And so if you hate Israel and you want them to, whatever, you want to be able to criticize them, then you want the refugees, you know, it could be 100 generations in a row. It could be 1,000 years later. You do not want them to get out of their little refugee tent camp or whatever and go get a job and live a good life and who knows what, move to America. You don't want any of that. They need to stay as refugees. That lets you put pressure on Israel. So it's cynical. But, you know, like I say, it's not who you love, it's who you hate. I mean, Hamas, they attack Israel so that Israel will kill a bunch of Palestinians in return. I mean, it's all part of the plan. You know, put your missiles underneath the hospital. Either they don't blow it up and then you get to use your missiles, or they blow up the hospital, you win either way. I guess wars in the old days, what you would do is you would go and kill all the military age males, period, of the people you were fighting. And you may, you know, maybe you keep the women or whatever. But basically, war used to work. But now we got rules, and the more powerful side keeps losing. The weaker side is like, we're not going to follow the rules. You're going to follow some rules that we don't have to follow? Sweet. And we're waiting to see, you know, if Israel can really defeat Hamas. If they can't, then it'll probably mean that Israel goes further to the right. Basically, the right-wing people are like, we want to really, really drop the hammer on these Palestinians. And then if Israel kind of loses, or more like, you know, it's a stalemate that is unsatisfying, then you'll be like, hey, vote for the right-wing people. We'll drop the hammer next time. And, you know, the Palestinians are going to be like, let's get more militant too. Probably everyone's going to get more militant. And I've been thinking about, you know, why didn't black people become terrorists after slavery? I mean, I kind of like to complain about woke stuff and Black Lives Matter here on this podcast, but whatever. The black-white stuff we got in America is nothing compared to Palestinian Jew stuff. And I don't know the exact answer, but my guess is it's AK-47s. Same reason, like, Kenya, Nigeria, a bunch of African countries were still kind of nice when they were British colonies, and then Britain left and they all turned into Civil War shitholes. It was right about the time that Russia started selling AK-47s around the world. And it turns out a lot of people cannot be trusted with those kind of weapons. And you don't need many of them. You know, it's like one Palestinian goes and mows down 10 Jews. Now 10, that means we got to do 100 back the other direction. 100 back the other direction, that means we got to send out, you know, 20 suicide vest bombers. Anyways, you know, you get the ball rolling. And I think, you know, in 1870, black people didn't have access to AK-47s. But I bet if they had had them, they probably would have used them. You know, a few of them, and then we would have had a big old race war, like a real war. I don't know, just a theory. On the Non-Zero podcast, Robert Wright is talking about his daughters. They're like in their early to mid-20s, fancy education, live in Brooklyn. They've been going out to pro-Palestinian marches in New York. And he asks them about their Jewish friends. He's like, how many of your friends are Jewish? They're like, oh, probably half of them. And how do they feel about this Israel war? They're like, oh, they're out marching harder than I am. So older Jews support Israel, younger Jews support the Palestinians in America. It's going to be interesting to see. Basically, that's a ticking time bomb for Israel. It may make them think if they're ever going to do whatever crazy thing that they want to do is, now's the time. This Israel-Hamas war, it's become kind of a psyop. Psychological operation. It's not really, you know, killing your enemy isn't how you win. It's convincing the general public in countries around the world. It's one that you can play at home, you know, on your phone with social media. And last week, Israel got lucky because a Hamas spokesman said that Israel bombed a hospital and killed 500. And then that was easily, you know, a lot of times you wouldn't be able to prove that was false. But anyways, that one was easily proven false. And that was after all the mainstream media parroted those numbers. I mean, Israel needs like one of those things once a week to simmer down now the psyop that the mainstream media is perpetrating. But so supposedly there's about 5,000 Palestinians killed by Israeli bombing. Anyways, it's basically coming from the same people who lied about the hospital. So I was thinking about it. So the hospital, I think, so they said 500 killed by Israel. It really turned out to be like 20 killed by jihadists. And so if that was the accurate ratio, you would take the 5,000 Palestinians that have been killed by Israelis, and then maybe the reality would be, oh, it was actually 200 of them, and they were all killed by jihadists. I mean, I don't think those numbers are accurate, but all of our numbers are coming from people who are, you know, they're doing a psyop. They'll say they're doing a psyop. They know they're doing a psyop. We know, you know, is Hamas doing a psyop? Hell yeah, they are. They will admit to it. But I guess if it's the only numbers you got, or, you know, left-wing media is like, we like their numbers. We like their PSYOP. We're doing the same PSYOP. Take their numbers. Anyways, I've been listening to the Times of Israel Daily Brief podcast. Comes out each day. It's a good one. It's very informative. Anyways, they start off every episode with, like, day 22 since Hamas killed 1,400 Israelis. They say something like that at the beginning of each episode. And basically, they're framing it. They want, you know, they want to remind you, hey, remember those kids, babies that were killed by Hamas? Remember that? Anyways, and then NPR is the opposite. Here's a little clip of how NPR opens up their discussion of the war.
Relief efforts for the more than 2 million people trapped in Gaza could soon come to a halt if fuel isn't delivered to the besieged enclave.
There have been weeks of negotiations to try to get aid into Gaza. The United Nations now says that desperately needed relief can't be delivered since Gaza has been cut off from fuel and other basic necessities.
I mean, the situation is terrible, and it gets worse by the hour, not even by the day.
And this all comes because, as you will recall, Gaza has been under constant bombardment since October 7th, when fighters associated with Hamas, which is the governing authority in Gaza, launched a cross-border attack, killing more than 1,400 people in southern Israel and taking more than 200 hostages. In Gaza, the health officials say that more than 6,000 have been killed, and hospitals running on generators are struggling to treat the wounded.
We're joined now by Alyssa Nadworny from Tel Aviv. Alyssa, what can you tell us about what's happening in Gaza right now?
I talked with Juliette Tuma, who is with the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. 38 members of her staff have been killed. Many more have lost family members and homes.
Our supplies are really dwindling and they're running out fast. This is why we need fuel today.
So I'm trying to imagine that I'm a terrorist. I think in another life, I could have been one. So I'm young, I'm dumb, I'm full of something. Cream of some young guy. Now what makes me a terrorist? Makes me want to be a terrorist or continue to be one? You know, you kill my innocent Palestinian cousin. Yeah, that might make me want to be one. You kill my cousin who's a terrorist. That might make me want to be one too. You do something bad to the Palestinians 75 years ago. That might make me want to be one. You know, next year, you do something bad to the Palestinians 76 years ago. And that might make me want to be one too. But here's the question. So, my cousin's a terrorist. They go kill some Israelis. And then the Israelis flatten the houses of every single person in my family and all the houses of all my friends. I don't know if that makes me want to be a terrorist. I mean, you know, basically, I want to go kill the people I hate. I'm willing to risk my life for it. I don't think that I want to destroy the lives of every single person I know and love. Now, the part I have trouble imagining is I'm a Muslim. I go to a synagogue. Boy, I can never remember. A mosque. The imam is telling me to go kill them. I don't know what that does for me. Maybe I'm like, all right, fine. Kill my whole family. I don't care. Sorry, destroy all their lives. It seems like the Muslim terrorists in Europe, a lot of times their backstory is they were not religious. They were, you know, doing drugs and alcohol and basically doing all the stuff that Islam prohibits. And then they find religion and 6 months later, they go knife people in London or whatever. So I don't know how religious the younger ones are. I mean, the older ones probably are full-on religious. You know, about the time you're getting married, having kids, I think you're a true believer then. But also, you're like, you know what? I just want to be in charge of the young terrorists and send them off. I mean, we'll see, but I may have already said this in the podcast, but I think the second Intifada, which was the early 2000s, it was 1,000 Israelis, 4,000 Palestinians lost their lives, and basically it's simmered down now, Hamas, or whichever side was doing it. It might have been Fatah or whoever was in the West Bank, or maybe all of them were going about it. Basically, it seemed to last about 15 years until a new generation came up. And we don't see the people in the Palestinians in the West Bank going too crazy right now. I think they may be looking at, you know, bombing the hell out of Gaza may at least simmer down now the West Bank. I think to a certain extent the right-wing settler Israelis in the West Bank are like, we're let off the chain. The army's too busy over there. I want to hear about that part. People aren't talking about that much. Bit more information on the accuracy of Palestinian fatalities as reported by Hamas. Apparently in previous conflicts and wars with Israel over the last, I don't know, 20 years, the numbers they reported turned out to be accurate, at least for total dead. The part they don't agree on is how much of it was innocent civilians versus Hamas fighters. One of the bigger conflicts, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, it was 1,000 dead, and then it was 300 innocent, well, it was 300 of one and 700 of the other. And so Hamas said it was 700 innocent civilians and 300 fighters, and Israel said it was 700 fighters and 300 innocent civilians. And apparently, part of the discrepancy is how you classify Hamas police officers. Hamas says they're just police officers, they got nothing to do with the war. And Israel says Yeah, you know, during the day they're police officers, at night they're terrorists. I guess I don't know what number I thought it was, but 300 or 700 out of 1,000 being fighters. I thought using human shields would be a lot more innocent civilians. Like, I don't know what I thought, 1 to 10 or something. But maybe quite a bit over half are terrorists. I don't know. Some pro-Palestinian group at Columbia University had a black lesbian movie night, and they said that white Jews were not allowed. So people online were calling them Lesbola. Well, that's it, and thanks for listening to the end.